And joining us on the Comcast Business Hotline, Beyond Fast, is a man who will not be alone in the building with just the media people and the players and the staff. He will also be in the building with some fans this afternoon. T-Mac, you won't be alone today.
There's some real human beings around me. This is unbelievable. Yeah, the parking lot gates opened at 11 o'clock, and fans are just starting to trickle in now. As we know, it's going to be a smaller number, about 5,500 people expected for today, a pretty big secondary market for these tickets. So I would expect that full 5,500 to 6,000 will be here at Lincoln Financial Field. And they'll be accompanied by the cardboard cutouts, which are still in the stand. So it's going to be this kind of weird mixture of fake and real people at the link today.
Well, that's fantastic, man. Well, listen, coming in this week, of course, coming off a 38-29 loss to Pittsburgh. What was the, and like we always like to ask you to start things off, the matches for the week, the offense has improved. Carson Wentz looks better. And, of course, Travis Fulgham has looked tremendous, and a great story by you on ESPN.com about Travis Fulgham's background. What was the message driven into the team this week from Doug Peterson as they get ready for this afternoon's contest?
Yeah, really, it was about coming to play with a sense of urgency and limiting mistakes. I mean, this is a team that, if you look on paper, you look at the how the season has gone for each of these respective teams this year, or if you just look at the line, it's a 10-point favorite, Baltimore Ravens, coming in. The last time that the Eagles were home underdogs by 10 points or more was 1999. You guys know who was under center for that game?
Donovan McNabb.
That would be Doug Peterson.
Oh, no.
Before, before Donovan McNabb took over against the Cowboys. I guess the good news is that they actually ended up winning that game 13-10. But the bad news is you never want to be double-digit underdogs at home. It's been a long time since that happened. In order for them to pull out this win, I mean, talking to Peterson's point, you know, having mistake-free football is key because, you know, the superior talent lies on the Baltimore side. They're going to have to play a very clean game and hope that offense continues to pick it up.
Hey, Tim, you know, I have a lot of respect for your opinion, and I want you to give me a ray of optimism as to why you think the Eagles can win this game. Because B. West said I brought him down. Few people say I'm being negative, being a hater. You know,
I believe Tim.
But Tim, you know, I want you to give me some. Maybe you can change my mind because B. West can't. Maybe you can change my mind as to how the Eagles pull this win out.
They're making me work hard on a Sunday here, D1. Work hard. it's going to be a tall order for them, I guess. I mean, if you want to look at Lamar Jackson's performance so far this year, as we know, he's a dynamic playmaker. He's been able to get it done in every which way. And it's going to be, he's such a force. In fact, Jim Schwartz called him, the most dangerous player in the NFL. And I think you can make a case for that. Him and Patrick Mahomes probably 1 and 2. But he hasn't been passing the ball quite as well this year. And if that continues, then that can ease some of the burden off of a defensive secondary that's been having its share of struggles and allow kind of that front seven to focus more on the run game, filling their gaps, shutting that down. And if you combine that with Jackson kind of being off the mark, then there's a recipe for success. I mean, I think it's going to be, even though there was some good signs on offense from this team last week, they're now going up against the best defense in the NFL. Right side, if Carson Wentz and Travis Fulgham can make some magic happen against this group, they can do it against anybody. But I would think just hoping that Lamar Jackson doesn't click into that extra gear is probably their best chance.
You know, Tim, I just made the comment that the Eagles have to start fast in this game to put Lamar Jackson in a place where he has to throw the ball. But now I'm looking at the stats, and I'm looking at what they've been able to do in the first half of games, and they've outscored themselves in the first half opposed to them the way that they've scored in the second half of football games. Really, they're only averaging 9 points in the second halves of football games this season. They're averaging close to 14 points in the first half. How much faster can they start? It's our belief that you got to get the Ravens down by 10, 14 points early to force Lamar Jackson into throwing. Are they capable of putting up 21 points in the first half to make this a competitive game early and forcing Lamar Jackson to have to throw the ball and not get into that running game for the Ravens?
I mean, I was thinking more like 21 points for the whole game would be of an accomplishment for this group against this defense. So if they can get up, to your point, if they can get up early, B. West, I mean, then that can shape the way that the offense for Baltimore is attacking and can play right into the Eagles' hands. I mean, it's not like the Eagles don't have strength going for them. I mean, you know, their front four, you know, going into last week was number one in sacks in the NFL. They're getting a little bit of help back this week with Will Parks coming back. I think that that'll help them when they get into those sub packages. It, you know, less linebackers is great for this team, and more of their defensive secondary, more of those safeties that they brought in. If Parks can come in and contribute, I think that can help. That's kind of quiet down the defense a little bit. But yes, that's the recipe for this team. If they can jump up, how about, you know, Miles Sanders with another breakout play? Get them in an early lead, get the 6,000 fans into a little bit, and then maybe you're talking.
Hey Tim, how concerned are you about Doug making decisions in strategic situations based on what we've seen the first five games?
You know what, Gunnar, I feel like over the course of his time here since 2016, he's come out pretty well in that respect. And I think a lot of that was listening to the right voices in his ear. And I feel like, you know, with the addition of a lot of assistant coaches this year, I don't think that Peterson has been true to himself necessarily or true to the voices that he normally depends on. And I think that's what he needs to get back to. I mean, he's always going to be led by analytics. You know, he's kind of bought into that. A lot of the aggressiveness that you see is a result of listening to that. And so I think that he'll continue on that path. When you have so many voices saying, you know, you should really consider this, Doug. You know what, Doug? Maybe we should do this in this situation. You know, after that, it just becomes noise. And you start to lose kind of yourself in that mix. And, you know, my opinion is that that's kind of what happened over the first handful of games here. So I think he's got to quiet that noise down. He's got to choose who he wants to listen to, the people that he's depended on in the past, and kind of go off of that. Because, you know, we've seen it work well for him before.
Tim McManus joining us on the Comcast Business Hotline, Beyond Fast. Brian Westbrook, Derek Gunn, Devon Givens. And I have to, since you just said that, bring up, you know, your conversation with them this week, T-Mac, where, you know, you asked the question and he said, where'd you hear that? And it was like Tim saying, let me put you in your place real fast and answer the question. I mean, that's just how he's been. So to your point, it just seems like, you know, he's just a little wound up, a little uptight on a few things. Well, we're just accustomed to a certain Doug Peterson.
Yeah, I think that's right, man. And I think that he needs to, you know, have the type of support that a Super Bowl winning coach demands. And respect. And I think he needs his proper spacing. And I think that, you know, there's just been a little bit too much of trying to over-influence Peterson, if that makes sense. Like, give the man his space. Let him operate. He's helped deliver a Lombardi trophy to you before. Everybody's in a panic over, you know, the slow start on offense, over, you know, and the down year last year. Everybody wants to tinker. Everybody wants to have a voice. Just let the man operate. You know, go back to those times when Brent Celek used to call him a frickin' phenomenal play caller. Like, he's got some of that in his DNA. And, you know, he's got to go off of his own style. He's got to bring the type of aggressiveness that he likes to play with. He needs to be the central voice in playmaking, in designing, in the game plan. You know, Wentz wants a piece. Assistant coaches want a piece. That's all fine and good. But, you know, let the boss be the boss. And I think that'll go a long way.
Hey, Tim, Lane Johnson's out today. Which offensive lineman worries you the most about facing this Ravens defensive front?
can you just say just one, or can you say all
he
except
can
four?
Say one. I didn't want him to dime out all of them. I said
none of
just
the
one.
Above. All of the above.
Hey, keep making me work here, Gunner. You know, Jamon Brown is a veteran in this league, but he's kind of new to this system and hasn't played alongside Jason Kelce or rookie Jack Driscoll. And so I would kind of point to that. At the same time, you know, Matt Pryor, I would probably call to this point the weakest link on what has been an unsteady offensive line. And he's out because he's in COVID protocol. My understanding is that he hasn't tested positive for COVID to this point, but he had a close contact. So he is out for this game, and Brown comes in. And that's the one that I would kind of circle, because it doesn't end up being an upgrade for this group. But, you know, that's one to watch. But, you know, the bottom line is that Jason Kelce is the lone remaining soldier of this original offensive front. They've really had to piece it together. And Lane Johnson, you know, even when he's half healthy, is an incredible force that they're going to not have the benefit of this week. And so, you know, that's a big task for Driscoll, and especially with the new guy playing alongside him.
And Tim, last one on your way out. Again, a great story I mentioned at the top that you had on Travis Fulgham, I believe, on Friday, speaking about just his path, you know, the rising of the stardom here, at least in Philadelphia, through two games. The one thing, of course, I don't think many of us knew was, you know, his upbringing and the traveling that he and his family have done. We heard about the Old Dominion connection, of course, with him going to school there. And now, all of a sudden, you know, it looks like Carson Wentz, at least for each week, has a number one wide receiver. So, you know, during your story and your reporting, what did you find out about Travis Fulgham of who the person is and how he became now the number one target for Carson Wentz?
That's really a story about somebody who's been under the radar at each stage. And that's in part because he didn't come to football until he was 16 years old. He didn't end up putting enough tape out there for coaches to kind of get them on his radar. So he ended up having to walk on to ODU. As soon as he got there, essentially, they gave him a scholarship because they saw what he could do. And then once he got to his senior year, it all came together for him, and he had this kind of, you know, click-in moment, and he busted out for, you know, 9 touchdowns and over 1,000 yards. And then the NFL, maybe we're seeing kind of a similar pattern here because he didn't get really much of a chance in Detroit. He got picked up by Green Bay, and they only kept him for 9 days, and 7 of those days he was quarantining alone in a hotel because of the COVID procedure. So they didn't give him a shot. He comes here to Philly. Everybody's watching him on the practice field like, man, this guy looks like he's pretty good. What's his story? Nobody had ever heard of Travis Fulgham. And then he comes in, and Carson Wentz can't stop throwing to him. And I think that's really the key, is that the way that Wentz is wired as a quarterback is he trusts you or he doesn't. And that really, I mean, that will show up in how many targets you get and how free he is with the football. Some of the passes that Wentz was making last week were like, where's that been? I mean, where he's thrown into tight coverage, where he's really giving Fulgham a shot, yep. And he's just letting it fly. We didn't see that with other receivers. So I think that's really the bright spot here. He trusts Travis Fulgham. For whatever reason, he trusts Travis Fulgham, and Fulgham has responded in kind. And so, you know, if that can continue, that's a huge story for this season. You know, forget the record. You know, if they can find a receiver to go along with, in theory, Jalen Reagor for the future, you know, that's huge for this team. So, obviously, everybody in Philadelphia is rooting for that guy.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top 5 Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.